Welcome to the Insights solo episodes of the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. My name is Marie Gervais. If you're passionate about gleaning leadership gems from others and delight at the capacity of the human spirit to survive and thrive, this is the show for you. After interviewing 100 plus guests from diverse cultures and professions, I have learned a thing or two about what makes successful people tick and effective managers lead. In each episode, I elaborate on one or several of the themes sparked by Culture and Leadership Connections guests and reflect on how these motifs can help us all be better humans. Join me as we contribute to the leadership discourse by elevating thought around the cultures and leadership themes that influence management and work. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections podcast listeners. This is Marie Gervais with episode 3 of Cultural Insights. So I'm going to look at some leadership and cultural insights in all of these solo episodes that I'm doing once a month. And this one is about why employees resist their bosses. This is a frequent complaint that I have from the people that I work with in training managers and also in coaching situations. Managers complain about their employees resisting them, and employees complain about their bosses resisting them or of them feeling resistant towards the words and behaviors of their boss. So because it's come up so frequently, I thought this would be a good topic to address on the solo podcast. Here's the basic idea, and that is that employees most frequently resist their bosses, and bosses resist employees when they do not feel safe. Unsafe to speak, unsafe to stand up, unsafe to say they made a mistake or admit they may not have been accountable. Maybe the work situation triggers a past bad experience and they are now projecting that into the current situation because they feel unsafe. That's the main thing to remember from this whole solo episode. And now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what that means and what that means in the workplace, whether you are a manager or whether you are a team member, what that means to you. So I'm going to do this in four parts. The first part is talking about the amygdala and your nervous system and how to create safety. And then the second part, part B, is how to do this with yourself, because you need to start with yourself before you do anything with anybody else. Otherwise, you risk projecting your own thoughts and impressions and fears onto the situation, which is usually wrong. Part C is about how to create a climate of safety from the head, the heart, the spirit, the body, and the cultural perspectives. And part D is specific situations that have come up frequently that people have spoken with me about and their solutions when that particular situation comes about. So I think you will find this quite useful. You can look at the transcript for notes, and it can be very helpful for addressing situations that might seem intractable. So I'm going to start with the safety general idea. And that is that we have at the base of our brain, on the head of the spine, we have the amygdala. And the amygdala is responsible for perception of threat. And it reacts in the same way, no matter what it perceives as being a threat. So if a dog barks, if somebody surprises you, if you've just had a bomb dropped on you or someone's threatening your life, you will get an equal reaction from your amygdala. Your amygdala isn't nuanced. It's the oldest part of your brain, the first to develop, and it can only perceive a threat. And so as soon as that perception of threat kicks in, hormones are released throughout your body and you begin to immediately react as if you were in fight or flight mode. And so this is something you cannot stop. It's a biological reaction that happens for everybody. And for some people, it's happening throughout the entire day. And if they have this happening regularly, they develop issues as a result. And in the workplace, what this looks like is unsafe feelings, whether people are conscious of them and can admit them or not. Feelings of being unsafe are manifested in fear and resistance. So when you're wondering how come people are resisting me, it's because they don't feel safe. Something about the situation is causing a threat reaction from their amygdala. And that helps you to detach from it emotionally instead of saying, oh, they really don't like me, or I'm being rejected, or they just resist change and that's the way people are, which are all not helpful explanations. You can say, ah, something in their nervous system is feeling threatened. I wonder what that could be. So it helps you to move from being frustrated or angry to being curious. The important thing about understanding this piece of all our nervous systems is that we can regulate our own amygdala, and there are many ways we can do that. So the remedy to deal with perception of threat at work, real or imagined, is to create a safe work environment where the nervous systems of all the individuals and also the matrix of the workplace culture allows people to be at their best, which means they can grow and prosper, learn from mistakes, and they have increased desire to want to advance the collective good and to advance the goals of the company or the organization. When you have a safe work environment and you have individual nervous systems feeling safe, it's amazing what could happen in the workplace. So when people feel safe individually, they start to show interest in others, which then translates into altruism and other desires to manifest virtues in their behavior. So to be helpful, to be friendly, all those things happen as people start to feel safe. If they don't feel safe, those things don't happen. So how do you do this? Now, this is the beginning. This is part A. Now, part B is what you're wondering, how do I create a safety matrix at work? How do I help people to feel safe at work? How do I help myself to feel safe at work? And what if I don't have formal authority? All excellent questions. And the answer to what should you start with to create a matrix of safety is start with yourself. So once you get those basic answers down, then you can move on to other things. But those basic answers are easy to say and hard to do. So here is something you can do to start with yourself. I'm going to give the example of somebody that I have worked with who said, when I think about my fallout with HR over hiring a particular individual, when I think about that situation, I feel. And then you need to say an emotion. So don't go off into a long story to yourself because that is just triggering your nervous system to continue feeling threatened. What do I feel? I feel anxious. I feel angry. I feel frustrated. I feel irritated. I feel exasperated. You should be able to say the emotion in a word. And if you don't know what to call it, say, I feel bad, but I don't know what it's called. Start there. So you start with what it is that's bothering you. I feel X, whatever it is, the emotion. If you can't name it, say bad, and then look up an emotions vocabulary on the internet later when you have time. Then you want to measure it on a scale of 1 to 10. So if you feel any of those unpleasant emotions regarding the situation, that means your emotion is attached to the memory. And the goal for safety for yourself is to detach the emotion from the memory. You still have the memory, you just don't get triggered by it. That is a great place to start for safety. So you detach the emotion from the memory in a number of different ways. But first, you can just start detaching it by naming it and measuring it. As you do that, slow down your breathing, close your eyes for a minute, and just think, where do I feel this in my body? You will start to be able to become conscious of it. Being conscious of it is called metacognition. Your brain is thinking about thinking. So you're putting metacognition into place and it has an emotional effect on your body. So you have, it's good. It's hitting all the points at the same time. So you have this metacognition. You're thinking about your own thinking and you're saying, when I think about this incident, then I feel this way. And it's about an intensity of an 8 right now. And as you're saying that to yourself, thinking it and noticing your breathing slowing down, wondering where this is located in the body, it starts to release automatically. This is really important. And if you still feel stressed about the situation, move. Moving is very, very important to releasing the stress from your body. Otherwise, it stays stuck and starts to cause tension, headaches, inflammation, and things like that. So when you're wondering, how should I deal with this whole piece about safety? Start with yourself and then move on. So how do you move on? Because now you still have to deal with this with your employee, your colleague, or your boss. How do you do that? You do it by intentionally building a climate of safety. This is the matrix I was talking about. And the matrix is the part of the womb that nourishes everything for the baby, right? We are creating a workplace matrix here with employees, colleagues, and bosses. It's the same thing. We need safety for the head, safety for the heart, safety for the spirit, safety for the body, and safety culturally. So if you can check off all those boxes, you know you're starting to build a climate of safety. And whether you have formal authority or not, you can still start doing this. So here's how the head feels safe. Explanation. If you explain things in advance, give a heads up and give time to get your mind around something, that's how the head feels safe. The mind feels better and the body calms down when it gets an explanation. The other thing that helps it feel safe is regular communication. If there isn't regular communication, it triggers the amygdala to perceive threat again. So explain, give it a heads up to people, and facilitate regular communication, which involves listening, speaking, considering, coming to a shared understanding, and that only happens when you seek input. So that's how the head feels safe, and it translates into the body feeling safer as well. So now let's go to the body. So how does the body feel safe? Well, is it pleasant to work there? Is it ergonomically viable? Would you want to work there? Would you want to work with that chair, in that mine, in that heat, with that machine, or with that colleague who is careless with the tools? If you wouldn't, then why would you put up with it for other people? Why would you want other people to tolerate the conditions you yourself would not tolerate? That's how you measure if the body is safe or not. So check out for yourself and also for everybody else, can they work so that their bodies are safe? They come with the same body parts and they leave with not only the same condition of those body parts, but better and improved condition. So when you feel that everybody is safe to do the work and you have checked in with them to make sure that their perception of safety is also there and that they feel safe to report a problem, which is then dealt with, the body will feel safe. Good. So now we've talked about how the mind feels safe through explanation, giving people time, and the body feels safe also when there's time because it allows itself to slow down. In a traumatic response, it's an instant response. And the way to reduce the traumatic response that most people have somewhere in their bodies is to give people time to slow things down, to tell them slowly. So that's the head and the body. Now we're going to go to the heart. How do people feel safe in their hearts? And this is very important because if their hearts are hurting, they won't be able to work. They're in too much pain. And in work, this means listening, acknowledging, validating how people feel. You can't tell how other people are feeling. If they say, I feel this way, say, wow, that must be bad. That must be terrible. Or that must be fun. Whatever it is that they're experiencing, it's not your place to judge how they feel. You just listen to it, acknowledge it, and validate it. And allow for difference of opinion without vilification. The biggest problem with workplace safety around the heart is that when people are in polarized situations, they vilify the other party. And that means that they see the other party as being less than human. That is a significant problem because if you see the other party as not being human, then you can do all sorts of horrible things to them. And they feel, again, very much under threat. So listening, acknowledging, validating, allowing for differences of opinion without vilification, but you're still not allowing for hatred to be promoted. So vilification and hatred are really close to each other. You're not allowing for that to happen. That creates a heart safety. And the thing that's really important is to treat others very respectfully and courteously. If there's a lack of courtesy in the workplace, it's a sign that the matrix has not been established for safety. Courtesy is the first sign of safety. Respect is the outcome of courteous behavior. So courteous and civil behavior at work allow people to feel respected. When they feel respected, then they settle right down and they feel happy to contribute. And if you are allowing people who are continuously being discourteous, uncivil, and disrespectful to others in the workplace to keep their job with the excuse that, oh, they're knowledgeable about the industry, or they know so much about the company history, that is creating a very unsafe environment for everybody's hearts, and it's going to spread to everything else too. If somebody is treating others disrespectfully and refuses to cooperate with you on dealing with their behavior or to actually address and make changes to their behavior, why are you keeping them? The reason people keep them is because they're scared. So it goes back to yourself. They're scared to deal with them. They don't have the courage to deal with them. I'm going to get to that in a little bit, but keeping people who are disrespectful is not acceptable. It is going to take your productivity down in your organization by a minimum of 30%. And as soon as they're gone, that productivity is going to move right up. So if people are not willing to make changes to their behavior and start showing respect, courtesy, and civility, ask yourself, why are you keeping them? Ask yourself that question. Next is, how does your spirit feel safe? It feels safe if people are trustworthy. If you do what you say you're going to do and show courage to address and solve problems, even if they're not easy to solve, and you do what you say you're going to do, then the spirit feels safe. And if you intentionally practice virtues, being helpful, being kind, being thoughtful, being assertive, thinking about the meaningfulness of things and being creative, all of those, any virtues that you intentionally practice are going to grow the matrix of safety for the spirit. So a sense of purpose and a sense of mission grows the matrix of safety for the spirit. And so does virtue. Anything you can do to practice those virtues that everybody admires across cultures, and you'll find them virtues lists everywhere on the internet, is going to help the spirit to feel safe. Okay, so you've got the mind, the body, the spirit, and the heart, and there's also cultural safety. When you're interested in people's experiences and their perspectives, whether or not you agree, they feel culturally safe. You do not have to know about everybody's culture. You don't have to know about all the practices of the culture or adjust yours. You just need to be interested in people's experiences and their perspectives. And if you agree or disagree, doesn't matter. Just be interested to find out. And the other thing that's going to help you with the matrix of workplace safety from a cultural perspective is to ask people about their expectations about how things should be done at work. What do you expect bosses to do when this happens? In your past job experiences, what have employees done when this happened? Just get a feel for the temperature of their past work experiences, and you will learn a lot about what their cultural expectations are without having to delve into a lot of details. This is very important because if people don't feel culturally safe, they will still remain quiet and they will still remain triggered in all the other aspects that I mentioned. Now we've covered all of that piece. I'm going to look a little bit more at part D, which is some specific examples of employee resistance, and then the solution. If you're having trouble with finding a solution for something, it's because maybe you're looking for a rule or a policy when you need to start with the principle. So what are the principles that are involved? They're high-level examples, or at the high level, they help elevate behavior and thought. So look for what will elevate behavior and thought in the situation, and you will start to come up with a solution. Here are some examples. Let's say an employee is resisting working with a boss, and maybe the problem is that they don't have experience or they haven't been trained. So if you find that they haven't been trained, or the team and haven't been all trained in a systematic way, the solution is to teach them, to educate, to be patient, to coach, and do this with a timeline in mind. Don't wait forever. You don't keep somebody for a year when they haven't made any progress. With coaching, with training, they should be making progress. And that then shows that the training has kicked in and they're ready to go. If they don't make progress, training is not the issue. Here's another reason why people might resist. They feel incompetent to do the task and they don't feel safe saying so. They just feel like they're going to lose face and they'll be humiliated, and they feel incompetent or unprepared to do the task. So for that, again, you need to go back and make sure you go through the steps and see what they know and don't know, and then say, you know what, you don't know, we'll just fill in the gap. So then you're using the head and you're using the heart to help them to feel safe. So the solution is to get them to show you the task, explain it, or teach it to someone else. If they can show it, if they can tell you about it, or they can teach it to someone else, they know. And if they can't, or they're having a gap, then say, oh, I'm happy to fill that in for you, or so-and-so will help you fill in that piece that's missing, and they will feel safer to try it. They still might not move forward until they have been accompanied for a while. Once they have that accompaniment, they'll feel better about it and they'll feel more confident doing so. So that's the inexperienced or untrained situation. Often the main reason people will resist you is because they don't feel they matter. They don't matter to you. They don't matter to the workplace. They don't matter to their colleagues. And if people feel they don't matter, then that's a serious thing, because people would rather be yelled at than have their comments dismissed or be treated as invisible. No one wants to be invisible. It's a denial of your humanity. So the solution is to notice people, develop empathy, show that you care. And if you truly don't care, you know what's missing? You yourself do not have safety, and you have to start there. So if you don't feel that you have any sense of fellow feeling with other people, it's because you yourself need to heal your own lack of safety, and then practice courtesy and civility with yourself. And when you start doing that, this is going to spread out to other people. People sometimes don't know how to ask questions, express opinions, or show up with an authority figure. They haven't actually been instructed in what would be appropriate, or they've had bad experiences with bosses when they did speak up, and they do not want that again. So again, that's the same thing. Build trust, show and explain to people how you want to hear from them, and wait. So once you've shown something, once you explain something, stay silent. Ask yourself, why am I talking? People will start to talk if there's silence. If there's no silence and you just keep filling in the space, you will never find out what they know and don't know, and if their sense of competency and confidence is increasing or not. The other thing that people will resist for is because they've had a lot of bad experiences with flavor of the month changes that don't stick, and they've become cynical. Well, that's going to take you a minimum of 18 months to change. And you need a strategy and a timeline. You have to create it and roll it out with many multiple check-in points so that people believe that you are true to your word. If you are not true to your word, then they'll go back to being cynical again. So those are just a few of the experiences that you might have with people. I'm going to give you two more categories. One is maybe people are unhappy with their job. So when people are unhappy with their job, they typically don't say it. They just act badly, or their performance drops. And if you're noticing that, you might like to ask the employee, what would they do if you were them about their behavior, or ask them if there's something they're unhappy with. And that can be an issue. Could be also that they've experienced favoritism or bias or prejudice, and they've lost respect as a result. So if people are unhappy, you want to first have that conversation with them to find out what it could be. And if the employee continues to have a bad attitude, you may need to cut your losses early and have that employee move to another place of employment. But if you are noticing that the same type of person keeps having the same complaints with you, you may have a bias that is affecting your judgment. And the way you can do a bias check is to say, when I think about this person getting promoted, I feel what? If you feel threatened, for example, then you know you have a bias against that person, that group, or that type of personality. So if you got that bias, then it is your responsibility to do something about it. Okay, the last thing is people have a personality problem or an addiction issue. And this is often not talked about, but people do have these problems. You've got at least a third of the workplace is under the influence of some kind of an addiction at pretty much every time. So we can't be naive and say, oh, people all have goodwill and they just want to do well in their job. Yes, assuming that they don't have a personality problem or an addiction issue. So if they have a personality problem, they have experienced problems with an authority figure in the past, and they may just attack anyone. You just happen to be in the wrong place in the wrong time. So what's the solution? Well, again, it always starts with find out what that person knows. Ask them at a time that they're not mad about their previous bosses, their work situations, their family life, and then find out if this person is willing to deal with learning to regulate. And if not, ask yourself that question, why am I keeping them? Okay. If it's an addiction issue, sometimes people's behavior has become erratic or changed in some way, or it has become untenable and unsafe. Maybe they've lost brain cells due to drug use, or they've started to become paranoid due to drug use. That's also very typical. What's the solution? Talk to them first. Ask about their substance abuse. If you're the employer, you can ask. You can't ask before you've employed them, but afterwards you can ask, what substances do they use and how often? And are they gambling frequently? And pornography, all of those are substance abuse type problems, right? They're all addictions. And if people have those, then, and you have evidence of a change of behavior, dangerous behavior, or uncooperative behavior as a result, then they need to be put into some kind of a program for help. If they don't cooperate, then of course, then you can go to the next step, depending on what's appropriate for you, according to the laws of your state or province or country. So I think I have now covered everything I wanted to talk about, and I'm just going to do a quick recap. So first, the reason people resist is because they don't feel safe. That's it, basically. We all have a nervous system. The nervous system is triggered by the amygdala, which is the perception of threat area of the brain. You can calm this, and that's why you always need to start with yourself by naming how you feel in one emotion, not a story, an emotion. Measure it and start to slow your breathing down and notice yourself calming. When you're working with employees, colleagues, or bosses, you want to build a matrix of safety for the head, the heart, the spirit, the body, and the culture. And finally, if there is resistance that continues, even when you've created those other things, people might be inexperienced or untrained, feel they don't matter, be unhappy with the job, or they may have personality and addiction issues. Look for the principle. Always start by finding out what the situation is and then see how you can apply the principle that would help everybody to feel safer in the situation. Okay, that's my take for today. And I am glad that you listened to it. If you find it useful, I would love it if you would go to the website, shiftworkplace.com, to the podcast page and click on respond to the podcast where you get a chance to leave a voice message and I could feature you in an upcoming podcast. So do let us know how you feel, because that would be super great. And we can add you and your voice and your opinion to the podcast as well. Thank you for joining me today. May culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day. Newsflash. Listeners can now interact with Culture and Leadership Connections podcast by leaving a voice or text message on FanList. It is a fun and quick way to let me know what you liked, ask a question, or leave a suggestion. I will feature some of the voice messages on upcoming episodes. You might be surprised to hear your own voice, but only if you leave a message, of course. So to leave your personal message or your question, go to shiftworkplace.com/podcast and click on the FanList link to leave it. I can hardly wait to hear what you have to say.